Well, let me just begin by saying that I'm thrilled to be here again tonight. This is a wonderful congregation, and I called my wife last night, and I was ecstatic. You know that word, ecstatic? It was just wonderful, and I am so pleased with your pastor. Pastor Jesse has been a friend. He's been a wonderful supporter. You don't know this, but we pray together and hold hands before the meeting, and the words that he speaks touch my heart. And I think you have a pastor who has the mind of a learner, and who has the heart of a shepherd, and who has the hands of a servant. And what more could you want? He speaks to me. Thank you very much. Now, this evening, if you have a program, we've switched the presentations. This is presentation two, and the reason I'm liking to start off with this is because I really don't like this subject very well. I have to tell you that this is my most difficult 45-minute project. And that's because it's all about the Big Bang. And people use huge, big words because the Big Bang, I think, is falling apart as we speak. And in order to keep it going, they have to confuse their audiences a bit, I think. At least it can be confusing to me. You're going to hear a lot of big words in this next 45 minutes. Please bear with me. Because in order to present the subject, we do need to know what's out there. And it's all about the Big Bang. Well, how young is planet Earth? How young? Is it a baby or is it elderly? Well, there are two different views, supernatural creation versus naturalistic bang, the naturalistic Big Bang. That's not to say God couldn't have created with a bang or bangs. But naturalistic, that doesn't work because God is then out of the equation. Well, there are two different views regarding chronology, sequence, mechanisms, and endpoints. See, you already have some big words here. But I think if you thought about it, chronology has to do with one day following the other. Sequence, what happens, and so forth during those days. And these are the two big theories. The Big Bang versus Genesis 1. This is billions of years, this is 6 days. And look what happens. In the Big Bang, you start out with light. Here you start out with darkness. In the Big Bang, you have stars early on. Here you don't have them until later on, day 4. It gets interesting here because here you have animals before birds, but God said birds came before animals. But do you know, it really becomes interesting here because here you have apes becoming human, and here you have man and woman uniquely created as adults, not from subhuman ancestry. Very, very different views. Faith-based science. I like acronyms. Failing again and again, I trust Him, the Creator God. F-A-I-T-H. That's biblical creation. But if you look at naturalistic evolution, don't think that they are not faith-based. They are very definitely faith-based, and it looks like this. Frankly, all I trust is human reasoning. Here is a creator God, here is no creator God. They are both faith-based constructs, if you will. Now, is there anyone out there, out in the cosmos? It's a big, big universe. Stephen Hawking wrote a popular book entitled A Brief History of Time that was published in 1988. Have any of you ever read that book? Well, you're just as well off not having read it. While expressing great uncertainty about God's existence, he admitted, "We are not yet at a grand unified theory of everything." Now, he has Lou Gehrig's disease, and that's a very, very pathetic disease. He was married to a Christian woman, and they were divorced because basically she couldn't tolerate his views of life. It was sad because she was a born-again Christian. Hawking wanted his book to be as popular as pop philosophy. The mystery of the book's success fascinates people. One idea or supposition is that few of those buying it have actually read it. And hardly anyone who has read it can understand it. It's very, very technical. It's all about the Big Bang. Scientists view the universe in terms of two partial theories, relativity and quantum mechanics. Big words, we're going to have more of them. Relativity describes the forces and effects of gravity acting on the large-scale universe everywhere in the universe from a few miles to billions of light years distant. That's relativity. Quantum mechanics is a little different. It deals with phenomena and particles on extremely small scales, such as a millionth of a millionth of an inch. So you have those two theories. Where did they come from? Well, they came from Albert Einstein. And everybody is looking for a way to make the two come together, but they don't fit well together. And that's part of the problem with the Big Bang. Invoking relativity and quantum mechanics, scientists are studying time, space, and matter, or some combination of them, which they call space-time. And according to Hawking, these are the greatest intellectual achievements of the first half of the 20th century. Well, I have news for him. I think the greatest intellectual achievement is in the Word of God. And it's been there ever since we had Bibles in our hands. However, these two ideas, relativity and quantum mechanics, are inconsistent with each other, so the search is on for a grand theory of everything, by the way, requiring no creator and no God. Here's Hawking today. It's a pathetic view. He has an extremely brilliant mind, but his body is wasting away. But he still says, does God really exist? And his answer basically is no. And in his last book, most recent book, The Grand Design, 2010, he argues, because there is a law such as gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. Spontaneous creation is the reason there is something rather than nothing. Why the universe exists, why we exist. It is not necessary to invoke God to light the blue torch, the blue touch paper, and set the universe going. Well, you know what? He starts right off saying there is a law such as gravity. Well, where did that law come from? That's a basic question. He doesn't address that. Claiming M theory, now here's another theory, as the mother fusing together several strains of string theory, he proposes that everything came from a quantum fluctuation in a vacuum some 13.7 million years ago. That basically means that everything came from nothing. It's just a vacuum out there. How often do you see something coming from a vacuum? It doesn't make sense. Now, M theory, the mother of all superstrings, is an extension of string theory in which 11 dimensions are identified, hopefully explaining the origin of strings, combining relativity and quantum mechanics in one dazzling stroke. Do you get it? I don't get it, but that's what they say. The key word is theoretically. Despite the best efforts of gravitational wave observations in the U.S. and elsewhere, including the Large Hadron Collider on the French-Swiss border, Hawking claims that no evidence for a creator has ever been found. Well, it's all about understanding God's mind. Hawking tries to answer Einstein's famous question as to whether or not God had any choice in creating the universe, hoping to understand the mind of God. Well, originally he was hoping to understand the mind of God, but he's given up. There is no God. His conclusion, the universe has neither beginning nor end. There is, in fact, nothing for a creator to do if he even exists. It's a very, very shallow philosophy of life. But what could be the meaning of such an ill-fated universe? Well, the answer is nothing, really, just nature and its usual laws and processes. However, this outlaws the mind of God, so why not just forget about all these equations? Well, because equations can be interesting, even though they can be befuddling. Albert Einstein, he said, matter is composed of atoms. Atoms are made up of protons, neutrons, and electrons. Electrons cannot be divided further, but protons and neutrons are each made up of even tinier particles called quarks. And now it appears that quarks and electrons may not be particles at all, but multidimensional entities called brains. I think these people don't have much in the way of brains sometimes. They're coming up with all kinds of gobbledygook, which is totally meaningless. Well, here's the world of strings, string theory. And Einstein came up with this too. He said, quantum theory and relativity cannot work together, but M theory, which incorporates the idea of strings, could meld the two theories at last. And of course, when all else fails, you might want to buy this book. Not to say that Einstein was an idiot or that any of us are idiots. That's a very demeaning term. We have intellect that God has given us. But at a certain point, you can be overwhelmed with nonsense. And that also requires intellect to understand what's going on. The problem is we're dealing with theoretical physics, not facts. The basis for science is experimentation resulting in validation or falsification. However, initial origins events cannot be put into experiments and reruns. You can't rerun the beginning of the universe. It can't be done. So we're in the realm of theoretical science being only as valid as certain assumptions. Now here's a chemist who's a Christian. Henry Schaefer, 64, a longtime University of Georgia professor and the top 10 of all theoretical chemists, sees no conflict between science and creationism. Says he, when you read or hear anything about the birth of the universe, someone is making it up. We are in the realm of philosophy, not science. Only God knows what happened at the very beginning. I think he states that very well. When I look at the solar system, I see the Earth at the right distance from the sun to receive the proper amounts of heat and light. This did not happen by chance. This most beautiful system of the sun, planets, and comets could only proceed from the counsel and dominion of an intelligent being, namely God. Who said this? You might be amazed. Sir Isaac Newton, way back in 1600 to 1700. Newton was a famed British physicist, astronomer, and mathematician, and I think he said it well, because he knew God was behind this. And you have to get back to the starting point. Well, creationists and evolutionists have the same starting point, believe it or not. We have the same starting point. The universe had to have had a beginning. We agree. Order came from disorder. We agree. Life came from non-life. When God made creatures, he made them from the dust. Unlike evolutionists, however, creationists see worth in the human soul based on him who created the universe as recorded in his word. The heavens, this is Psalm 19, I love it. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they display knowledge. There is no speech or language where their voice is not heard. Their voice goes out into all the earth, their words to the ends of the world. Just go take a look at the nighttime sky. Now, this is amazing. Here's the sun. Planet Earth, you see that little tiny dot? That's the Earth. The sun is 93 million miles from the Earth. 93 million miles. The moon is just under a quarter of a million miles from the Earth. You don't even see the moon here. It's so small. Saturn, here's Saturn, is 746 million miles from the Earth, 66.8 light minutes. And now you've all heard about solar flares because in this day and age of the green movement, everything may be heating up or may be cooling down. But anyway, solar flares have a real effect on what goes on in this Earth, not just heat-wise, but also with electronic communication, as you probably know. How big is a solar flare? Well, here's the size of the Earth. Here's one flare. Here's the sun. Imagine that, how big a solar flare is. They are monstrous. And if you look at the nighttime skies, you will see some wonderful constellations. Orion Nebula is a cloud of interstellar gas or dust. And here are other nebulae. Planetary Nebula looks like a planet. Crab Nebula supposedly looks like the legs of a crab. A cat's eye nebulae looks like an eye. I don't know that I would call that a cat's eye, but some people have called that a cat's eye nebula. Then you have giant spiral galaxies. We happen to live in a giant galaxy, but our galaxy is not the biggest, nor is it the smallest. It's a medium-sized galaxy, but it is absolutely huge. A nova is a star that suddenly increases in brightness, then slowly decreases in brightness during coming months to years. A supernova is an extremely bright nova increasing suddenly up to a billion times in brightness. Can you imagine that? The power out there in outer space. And here's a beautiful exploding supernova. It's gorgeous. Rotating neutron star. We don't have time to go into all of this, and I couldn't explain it anyway, what a neutron star really is. Red dwarf, dying star. Could that be a preview of our fate someday? I don't know how the Lord is going to end planet Earth. According to evolutionary cosmologists, billions of years from now, our sun, which is a star, will collapse into a hot white dwarf, like here, as in the red dwarf center. That's what evolutionists say. It's not a very hopeful future, by the way. Of course, you have billions of years, and a lot of time for more evolution. Who knows? Our solar system and we ourselves would then quietly pass into oblivion. However, does this fit with the Bible? I don't think so. It's going to be a grand event when Christ returns. The trumpet shall sound. It's not a quiet time. Gas and dust clouds in the Eagle Nebula. Well, let's look at stellar nurseries. Or is this emperor naked? You know, nobody has ever really seen the formation of a star. Cosmologists claim that stars are seen evolving in stellar nurseries such as this, but if stars are evolving, other findings should confirm this, and there are not other scientific findings. Where are those measurements by which we can prove that stars are evolving? Silence. Fact is, star evolution has never been proven. You read about it, but it's never been proven. A universe from nothing? Is that how the universe arrived, from nothing at all? A quantum fluctuation in a vacuum? Did everything come from a vacuum? That explains nothing when we don't even know where space came from. If you're an evolutionist, how do you know where space came from? Ex nihilo, that is out of nothing, creation, is so foreign to our experience that it can only be grasped as God reveals it to us. We can't make something out of nothing. That's ex nihilo. God did. With the exception of certain miracles, ex nihilo creation has not occurred since the beginning of time, and many have trouble believing it could happen. So foreign is it to our experience. Now let's talk about particle physics for a while. If you're confused by now, hold on. You're going to become more confused. At least I am. How were subatomic particles such as electrons, protons, and neutrons initially formed? What gives matter its mass? Why is there weight? Why is there gravity? The answer is supposedly in a theory first proposed by Scottish physicist Peter Higgs in the 1960s. According to a July 3, 2012 Associated Press article, physicists say they have now all but proven that the Higgs boson, that is this elusive particle, the God particle, exists. They say they may have found this particle. It has supposedly been found by experiments in CERN's atom smasher near Geneva, Switzerland, though never actually glimpsed. Have some of you heard about CERN or read about CERN? I see some yeses, okay? However, two independent teams are cautious, admitting that the God particle may actually explain more about how the subatomic universe works than how it could have started. The director of CERN said the newly discovered particle is a boson. They call it a boson. Sometimes I think they are bozos, but they call it a boson. But he stopped just short of claiming outright that it is the Higgs boson itself. Said he, "I think we did it. We have observed a new particle consistent with the Higgs boson." The Higgs is regarded as a key to understanding why matter has mass, combining with gravity to give all objects weight. This Hadron Collider is 16 miles long, and it is absolutely amazing what mankind can devise. You see this? This is like a wagon. This is huge, absolutely huge. In this March 22, 2007 photo, we're looking at the core of the world's largest particle accelerator, a superconducting solenoid magnet. It's a huge magnet. I think we all know what magnets are. We've never seen one quite like this. Experiments preparing to take data are seen at the European Organization for Nuclear Research, that's called CERN, at the Large Hadron Collider. Here's another view of this collider in its tunnel. Huge. You could drive a small golf cart down there for miles, 16 miles. British physicist Peter Higgs arrives for a scientific seminar to deliver the latest update in the search for the Higgs boson. You remember, he's the one who theorized the boson. And he's very happy. He is happy. former CERN director, Mr. Smith, claiming discovery of a new particle that he says is consistent with the long-awaited Higgs boson, known properly as a God particle, which is believed to give all matter in the universe its size and shape. See how happy these people are? Because they've discovered, at least they think they've discovered, that original particle that came out of a vacuum that started the universe. The Large Hadron Collider is a 16.8-mile-long underground particle accelerator where protons are propelled in a circular accelerator near light speed, smashing head-on into one another, producing flashes of energy. Well, that, ladies and gentlemen, is spectacular. Don't you think that's spectacular? That a little tiny proton hitting another one can cause this kind of energy? Graphic here shows a zoom effect of traces of proton-proton collision measured in the compact Mohn solenoid called CMS in search for the Higgs boson. The Higgs boson is supposedly the final piece in the puzzle of the presumed Big Bang. Interacting with other particles, it gives them mass. Without mass, matter could not be a cohesive and you couldn't have gravity. So it's back to the God particle. What is the Higgs boson? Well, it can't be seen, but scientists believe it exists because they say the Higgs field exists and the boson is a part of that field. So what's the Higgs field? That's my question. Scientists believe the Higgs field is everywhere in space. Think of the Higgs field as oil, and everything passing through it slows down. So the Higgs bosons stick together, dragging them together, giving them mass. If the Higgs boson can't be seen, how could you detect it? Well, you spend $4.4 billion, you build this huge tunnel, you hire 10,000 scientists, you send these protons whizzing around, crashing into each other, and it's at this point where man has created conditions supposedly similar to those at the birth of the universe. Well, that word supposedly, isn't that an amazing word? Because it's all about theory. It's not about fact. Why is it important? The origin of matter's mass has been fiercely debated for decades. Finding the Higgs boson would vindicate the so-called standard model of the Big Bang and physics theory itself that developed in the early 70s, claiming the universe is made from 12 particles providing the building blocks for all matters. It gets more complicated. How sure are they? Well, experts are already being cautious. CERN's boss, Rolf Heuer, cautioned about the need for verification. Says he, it's a bit like spotting a familiar face from afar. Sometimes you need closer inspection to find out whether it's really your best friend or your best friend's twin, or maybe your enemy. And why is it called the God particle? Because like God, it is everywhere but hard to find, goes the quip. In fact, the origin of the name is rather less poetic, and I don't want to set you off here in a bad way. But I want you to know the history of this God particle, where it came from. It came from the title of a book by Nobel physicist Leon Lederman, whose draft title was, I'm not going to say it. If you want to read it, you can read it. The title was later modified for obvious reasons because people were put off by that, and now they call it the God particle so as not to be offensive. But they're not talking about God at all. Not at all. It's just a swear word. Thanks, nature. One of the scientists there was joking. She said, thanks, nature. Thanks. Nothing about thanks, God. Thanks, nature. Drawing laughter from the crowd. Well, later she told reporters that the standard model of physics is still incomplete because the dream is to find an ultimate theory explaining everything, and we are far from that. You know, these scientists are going through a very difficult time because they have a mindset, and they've got to prove it. They haven't proven it because it's impossible to prove. What they've proven is that it is impossible to prove. After all, where did the subatomic particles come from in the first place, or the laws of particle physics, if not from a creator? Everything doesn't just come from a vacuum. The problem is, science can be mistaken. That's not to say Christians can't be mistaken. I've made a lot of mistakes in my life, and I bet one or two of you may have made a mistake. That's life. Since the world began, according to evolutionary theory, the universe began 13 to 18 billion years ago with a big bang. The sun and planets evolved out of the cosmic dust about 5 billion years ago. Life evolved from inorganic molecules 4.5 billion years ago, and pre-humans 1 million years ago. Our Lord Jesus, however, taught that mankind existed from early on, saying, from the beginning of creation, God made them male and female, Mark 10, verse 6. I'm going to emphasize that again later on in our presentation. Adam and Eve were created at the beginning of creation, not billions of years later. That's one of those arguments that I think is pretty clear against an aged universe. Some people say they believe in six-day creation, but the universe and the earth are aged. That's not the way this text in Mark explains it. In Exodus 20, verse 11, the fourth commandment says it extremely clearly. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them. Therefore the Lord rested on the seventh day, the Sabbath. Accepting lengthy ages of cosmic and or biological evolution is thus dangerously close to mocking God. Be careful. Well, did everything start with a big bang? If so, this is the way cosmologists, big bang theorists, see everything, like a big balloon that was small, it gets bigger, it's bigger. See how close the galaxies, these are galaxies, see how close they are. But we're in an expanding universe, and so the galaxies are drifting apart from one another. And I believe that's true, because you can verify that with a Hubble telescope, for example. I don't believe, however, that planet Earth has to be on the outside of that balloon. I think planet Earth can be in the center of that balloon, and we'll talk about why. Well, here's the Big Bang. You have some original matter. And that expands. You have a universe with no center. Again, this is the Big Bang theory, no center in the universe. But doesn't this sudden explosion of nothing into something that is the universe sound like a miracle? If you believe in miracles, you don't always have to come up with a scientific explanation. You won't be able to. But this is how the Big Bang looks. You start with a quantum fluctuation in a vacuum. There's nothing out here. It's all nothing. Something has to come from nothing. We don't know how that happened. I know how it happened. You know how it happened. But it wasn't just all by itself. It wasn't chance. But then you have 400,000 years later, you have the Dark Ages. You have here the development of plants and galaxies. Here you have dark energy. People don't even know what dark energy is. But they realize that there is a tremendous expansion going on in the cosmos, and there has to be some kind of energy, or at least some attraction. And they don't know what that is. We now have space probes that can really get a good look at planets and at galaxies. And there are over 100 billion galaxies. Did you know that? And in an average-sized galaxy, you will have as many as 100 billion stars. There may be as many as 150 billion stars in our galaxy. And what does the Bible say? God named each of those stars. Can you imagine having a brain like that? It would keep me up nights forever. The initial expansion was from quantum scale fluctuations in a trillionth of a second. That's what Big Bang theorists say. That's kind of interesting. Somebody's put a lot of work into that. Paul Davies, physicist and evolutionist, in his book, The Edge of Infinity, describes the Big Bang as follows. The Big Bang represents the instantaneous suspension of physical laws, the sudden abrupt flash of lawlessness that allowed something to come out of nothing. It represents a true miracle. Here's an evolutionist who at least realizes that you can't get this without a miracle. But I think his definition of a miracle is quite different from ours. He doesn't need a God. So why is this more scientific than in the beginning God created? Now, if we had weeks, we could talk about all these different steps from the earliest moments to the formation of atoms to the Dark Ages, the modern era. 13.7 billion years later, zip, zip, today. We're not going to go into that. I've already confused you sufficiently, I believe. But it's interesting that there are all these theories, theory A, B, C, D. Nobody knows what happened before the Big Bang, so they have theories. Here's the Big Bang, and nobody knows about the future. So what do they have? They have theories, A, B, C, and D. Again, we could spend a week talking about these. We don't have the time. But it's theoretical. Well, what about an inflationary bang? Scientists say the universe developed and matured quickly during its early milliseconds. The Bible doesn't reject a cosmic bang or bangs, but it doesn't affirm that either. Neither did Moses mention billions of years for God's unfolding of the universe or stars coming before planet Earth. Remember Exodus 20? For in 6 days. Had God wanted to say billions of years, why didn't he say it? The Bible. Now, there are some huge problems with the Big Bang and its explanation of it, and we call those missing links. Here are just a few of them. Time, matter, dark energy, star formation, galaxy formation, chronology sequence, days. That's just the beginning of problems that scientists cannot explain. However, I think we should have no problem with expansion of the cosmos, because when you read Psalm 104, verse 2, you read, "You stretch out the heavens like a tent." Isn't that a beautiful picture of what we see today? Everything is expanding. The strangest and least expected discovery from the Hubble telescope was that, and one that has profoundly modified our basic concepts of space and time, came when astronomers found that cosmic expansion is not slowing down. They thought it was slowing down. That would make sense because of the laws of motion and gravity. It's just the opposite. Cosmic expansion is speeding up big time. They were expecting to find that the expansion rate had slowed over the eons, since cosmic expansion should be braked by the combined gravitational attraction exerted by all the galaxies on one another, as when a ball is thrown into the air and is slowed down by the Earth gravity. What happens when you throw a ball in the air? It comes down. That's not rocket science. But if you look at the outer space, it's as if a ball had been thrown into the air, and it first slowed down, but now it suddenly speeds up and simply flies away. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that energy is out there. Sometimes in my sleep, I think, God's heaven. I don't know what heaven is like, but it's probably massive. Could it be exerting some kind of force on our universe? I don't know that. But there seems to be a tremendous amount of energy out there. It sounds like God to me. No natural force can do such a thing, and none in the known universe could be accelerating the cosmic expansion rate, nor is the newly discovered force particularly subtle. Scientists calculate that the new force comprises 70% of all the matter and energy in the universe, and I'm going to take a look at that in a moment. Physicists are calling this unknown force that is pulling everything apart dark energy. So here you have it, 70+% of all the energy out there in the universe, they say, is dark energy, and we don't have a clue what that is. But it's the force, and I think that may be true, that it's pulling apart all of our galaxies. Why that's happening, I have no idea. But look at this. The amount of energy that is made up by stars, planets, and so forth, all of the stars and planets in the whole world, is only 0.5%. All of this is unexplained, either dark matter or dark energy. It's astounding, just astounding, if you believe this. And I do tend to believe this, that there's tremendous force out there. As University of Chicago cosmologist Rocky Kolb says, naming is not explaining, and nobody yet knows what dark energy actually is. When physicists calculate the energy in that newly discovered force, they get absurdly large results, ranging from infinite, that can't be right, to zillions of times more than can be explained by known energy, a disparity that astronomers are calling the worst failure of the order of magnitude estimate in the history of science. You see why the Big Bang is falling apart? They don't have an explanation for this. They're trying. No explanation. Amidst the hype, what do you do? Well, the bang is an embattled theory, and the band-aids patching it are not convincing. Now, I'm going to show you. There are old problems. We're not going to go into all of those. You can quickly look at those words if you want to. It's not going to mean anything. There are newer problems, and there are newer problems still. These are all problems with the Big Bang. And I think even one of them would be enough to sort of smash the theory. Something is wrong. Clearly something is wrong, yet one gets the sense that scientists have as yet detected only a fraction of the Big Bang's problems. So why not just admit with the psalmist, by the word of the Lord were the heavens made, and all the host of them by the breath of his mouth. Let all the earth fear the Lord, let the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him, for he spoke and it was done, he commanded and it stood fast. That's a pretty good grasp by this psalmist. Hubble bubble, Big Bang trouble. I put those words together. Ask any cosmologist about the convincing supports for the Big Bang, and right at the top will be background radiation, the speed of light, and redshifting. The usual explanation is that the light from distant stars is redder than closer in due to the wave-like Doppler effect, bending light waves, just as sound waves are bent when a train passes in front of you. It makes a different sound as it moves away from the observer. As Edwin Hubble explained it, the greater the redshift, the faster the individual stars and galaxies must be moving away from the Earth, indicating an expanding universe, confirming for him an aged cosmos. Here are the top three evidence. We don't have time to go into them much. Cosmic background radiation, speed of light, and redshifting. Background radiation, the argument. Here's the scientific, I call it a pseudoscientific argument, fits with a tiny nugget of energy expanding into all the various structures in the universe. But the fact is, it fits better with heat from starlight, since it is far too smooth to account for cosmic lumpiness. How many of you are following this at least a little bit? I'm very thankful, because this is something that I think we can follow to a certain extent. The speed of light has always been stable, so calculating back where the universe has to be aged. The fact is, the speed of light is an assumption. The universe may be much younger than eons. Redshifting, we just talked about that, light becoming more red as it goes away from us. The argument is that different redshifts indicate different distances and positions for stars and galaxies. The fact is, these different redshifts for adjacent galaxies indicate that the Big Bang has serious problems. This is what cosmic background radiation looks like. It is heat left over from something. Big Bang theorists say it's left over from the Big Bang, but if that's true, it should be really much, much, much more patchy, which it isn't. It's very, very uniform. And it fits far better with heat from starlight, for example, or heat coming off from certain planets. This planet gives off heat. Radiant heat left over from the Big Bang versus from stars and galaxies. Well, I think it's from stars and galaxies. It doesn't fit well with the Big Bang. What about the speed of light? Well, the speed of light is represented mathematically by Einstein's formula, E equals mc squared. Light travels at 186,000 miles per second, pretty fast. A light year is the distance light travels in 1 year. It's a few miles. The moon is 1.5 light seconds from the Earth. The sun is 8 light minutes from the Earth. But the speed of light has to be questioned. A team of Australian scientists led by theoretical physicist Paul Davies has proposed that the speed of light may not be a constant. A revolutionary idea that could unseat one of the most cherished laws of modern physics, that is Einstein's theory of relativity. If so, physicists will have to rethink many of their basic ideas about the laws of the universe when one of the cornerstones of physics collapses. It's not obvious what you hang on to and what you discard. That's what Paul Davies said. These physical laws, the laws of physics, aren't standing up to scrutiny. very well. Double galaxy is beautiful, what we see out there. The problem for the Big Bang proponents is here you have two galaxies which have the same redshifting. which have different redshifts. They should have the same redshift if they're located in the same area, but they don't. So that rules out some of redshift theory. Halton R. points out that stars and galaxies can have very different redshifts, though they are located in the same vicinity. That doesn't make any sense, really. Here's Halton R. He's a wonderful cosmologist, a key actor in the debate on the origin and evolution of galaxies in the universe. He was an astronomer at the Mount Wilson and Palomar observatories in California for 29 years, but they fired him. Edwin Hubble didn't like his ideas because he didn't fit in with the Big Bang. He wasn't buying it, and Hubble was. Subsequently, Halton Arp has earned all these prizes. He's a very distinguished man in cosmology. Actually, we're talking about cosmogony. Cosmology is the study of existing heavenly bodies. That's cosmology. Cosmogony has a G in it, like Genesis. That has to do with where did everything start? Now, here are some things, again, that I don't fully understand. Redshifts are used to describe the expansion of the universe and the distance of a galaxy from the Earth due to stretching of light waves. The further out, the redder they become, supposedly. Here you have compressed the blue side moving toward the Earth, light. As it moves away, it stretches out. These light waves stretch and they become more red. It's pretty, though, isn't it? Well, Galaxy 1, Galaxy 2, Galaxy 3. That's the way it should work. We should observe redshifts at all distances along the light spectrum. That's the Big Bang model. And it should be rather homogeneous. It shouldn't be in patches. What do we see? What we actually observe is distinct quanta at million light-year intervals. Again, I don't pretend to understand all this. But this, then, is a new theory, placing the Earth back in the center of the universe. And what it looks like is you have different galaxies in concentric circles out there. Very, very different viewpoint. And I don't know if there's truth to that, but there are Bible-believing Christians who look at this and say, it makes a lot of sense. The way God has created things, wouldn't we be at the center of the universe? I don't know that it has to be read that way, but it makes some sense, I do believe. And apparently this has been confirmed, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me either, how those individual groupings of galaxies would have become distributed as they seem to be. Redshift distribution has been found to be strongly quantized. Those are quanta. In the galactocentric area, that's is where we would be, galacto-centered, that center of the galaxy. That's where we in Earth, on planet Earth, would be. What does this mean for the Big Bang? If this is correct, the evidence seems to suggest that the so-called cosmological principle upon which all of the Big Bang cosmology is based is wrong. What about an expanding balloon model? Where is planet Earth? Is it somewhere out there on the surface, or is it at the center of the universe, in which case it is galactocentric? Newer cosmogonies, as I said, are again placing the Earth right back at the center of the universe. So, Halton Arp, what does he say about redshifts? He says, the fact that measured values of redshift do not vary continuously but come in steps is so unexpected that conventional astronomy has never been able to accept it in spite of the overwhelming observational evidence. Equal steps in all directions in the sky means we are at the center of a series of explosions, which is an anti-Copernican embarrassment. The thing I gather from this is we don't know how God created the cosmos. He may have done that in certain steps, but I think they happened very quickly because it was on the fourth day that the sun, moon, and stars appeared. Big bomb Big bang bombshell. In an open letter to the scientific community, 229 scientists, 34 of them astrophysicists, said, "An open exchange of ideas is not tolerated. The Big Bang today relies on a growing number of hypothetical entities, things we've never observed. The Big Bang theory cannot survive without fudge factors." The Big Bang can boast of no quantitative predictions that have ever been validated by observation. In no other field of physics would this continual recourse to new hypotheses be accepted. These, ladies and gentlemen, are pretty well-developed cosmologists. They know what they're talking about. What about distant starlight? Well, a lot of solutions have been proposed. Light being created in transit, variable speed of light, gravitational time dilation. We don't have to look at all of that. But distant light, starlight, although it's puzzling, it is true that these galaxies are millions of light years away from us. The measurements, I think, are true. But it could be that the cosmos has an appearance of age, that God could have just gone poof and put it all out there at once. After all, could it be that God created stars with their light already on the earth on day four of the creation week? Well, take a look. You can't use worldly observations alone, imposing them on God's methodology. And I think a good example of that is Eve. Eve wasn't a baby. She was fully formed. She was an adult. And you have the same appearance, I'm sure, not just in Eve. She was fully grown, hair and all, when Adam first saw her. And how about plants and trees? Well, they must have been full grown too, although there must have been seeds that were growing, perhaps at the same time. Evolution has no explanation for something appearing full grown, but that may have happened with the cosmos because God is a God of miracles. God created trees mature with fruit. He created mature animals. He created Adam mature. There was instant learning of language at the Tower of Babel. Jesus fed 5,000 with just a few loaves and fish. Jesus turned water into wine. He withered the fig tree. And there was instant healing of a soldier's ear. Remember in the Garden of Gethsemane? These are all miracles. If you believe this, why can't you believe in God creating the cosmos miraculously? So light years are real, but evolutionary eons are not. And you have to put a lot of question marks there. Fading cosmological myths. Evolution has many unsolved problems mentioned by some surprising people. Timothy Eastman, chief of the of NASA, having his office at the Goddard Space Center, is one of such top authority, abandoning conventional mainstream dogma. I don't know how long he'll keep his job. During a 2004 lecture at Claremont College in Southern California, he trashed the Big Bang as a failed theory that must be discarded. Here's a NASA person. The cosmic bang, however, is still a reigning theory in mainstream science, pervading classrooms everywhere. Even creationists must obtain their advanced degrees within the assumed Big Bang framework, and it's hard for them to think outside that box. But what if it's not so? Unraveling mistaken theories may take a while, but serious scientists are engaging in this work, and we know that God spoke and it was done. So here's a thought. I think creationists come out way ahead of evolutionists when it comes to the Big Bang. Big Bang theory raises far more questions than it can possibly solve. Where did exploding matter such as stars come from? Where did all that energy come from? I'll take the explanation of a creator God over evolutionists' feeble explanations any day. What can science actually tell us? Science works in the present, not in the past. It can't always tell us about the past. Origin science, therefore, must be resting on assumptions, which it does. So why not study the universe within a biblical framework? The Bible is God's instruction manual for understanding the universe, and when it touches on science, it is so totally reliable that it has never been proven wrong. When we hitch our science to fading stars like the cosmic or the biological bang, we shouldn't be surprised that our theology has the dwindles as well. And your pastor and I have had that discussion about what's going on in some of our Christian colleges, universities, high schools, seminaries. Scientists need to remember what happened in the beginning is history, how we explain it is philosophy, who did it is theology, When and how he did it is revelatory truth. That has to come from the Bible. Each of these rests on presuppositions related to God's word. And so you have to figure out which lens you're going to look through, man's lens or God's lens, biblical history, the lens of Scripture. We talked about that yesterday. And wonderfully, there are all kinds of creation texts and books now describing all kinds of fallacies with the Big Bang. They're all over DVDs. The reality is the Big Bang is not a fact. Most evidences contradict it. The Bible doesn't teach it. The Bible teaches a young earth, and many scientists disagree with the Big Bang. Famed Sir Frederick Hoyle, many years ago, said the main efforts of investigators have been in papering over the holes in Big Bang theory, building up an idea that has become ever more complex and cumbersome, and I would say confusing. I have little hesitation in saying that a sickly pall now hangs over the Big Bang, and when a pattern of facts becomes set against a theory, experience shows that that theory rarely recovers. And here's just a list of a whole bunch of young Earth scientists. Again, I keep saying this, these people are no dummies. They all have their PhDs, and they will not believe in the Big Bang. Newer cosmogonies are attempting to solve all these problems. We may be entering the golden age of newer cosmogonies. Einstein, of course, shook the world with his theories, but newer cosmogonies are again focusing on time. There are all kinds of different theories. God is a God of mystery and miracles, so he could have flung the stars and planets into space before setting up the laws of the universe. The laws themselves must have been affected by the fall, perhaps making starlight slower now than early on. We don't know that. Also, any initial excess of neutrinos, as during the flood, would have reset all atomic clocks, making Earth's rocks appear older than they actually are. And I'm not going to go into this gravity well. We know that clocks run slower at higher elevations than down below. This is in Colorado. This is in Greenwich. At sea level, up on the top of Pikes Peak, they run slower. Space-time distortion. Time gets distorted. Clocks run at a different rate in outer space than they do here. That may explain some of the difference. Well, how about recent creation? Well, you can't do origins theory without, you know, in a theological vacuum. So who can do better science, believers or atheists? I think it's obvious. The Bible may not give us exact dates, but it does give us clues pointing to recent creation, thousands, not billions of years. The purpose of the cosmos? If the cosmos is the result of natural processes, then the celestial bodies have no purpose at all. But I think we know, because we're told in Genesis 1, verse 14, and God said, let there be lights in the expanse of the sky to separate the day from the night. Let them serve as signs to mark the seasons and days and years. So where did we get our idea of a week? Well, this is how we know what a day is. This is how we know what a month is, the earth and the moon rotating around the earth. This is how we know what a year is, the earth circulating around the sun in 1 year's time. There is one form of inflation theory that matches the evidences perfectly, but it is never considered by secular cosmogonists. God made the earth by his power. He founded the world by his wisdom and stretched out the heavens by his understanding. That's from Jeremiah 10, verse 12. But why are we even here? Well, throughout time, people have generally agreed that everything that we see exists. Everything that exists had a beginning. Every beginning has to have had a cause. Every cause has a purpose or something that causes it. Just because we can't explain everything about this, and just because we can't explain everything about God and creation, doesn't mean that they don't exist. So remember this when thinking about string theory. A cord, and this is the last slide, you're going to get a little rest here. A cord of three strands is not easily broken. And to me, these three strands that we ought to think are as follows. Think about general revelation, that is everything that God has created, not just the world, but the whole cosmos. Special revelation, God's word. And finally, spirit-directed faith plus reason. Just because we have faith doesn't mean we can't use our intellect. I wish I could use my intellect a little better than what I've had to go through tonight. But thank you for listening. And no appendectomies as yet?
Okay. It's wonderful to know that God has been pleased to let you in on His secret. And that is, God is the first cause. This establishes for us a presupposition. We believe that God is the first cause. When once you do that, you solve a lot of problems. Because if God is the one running this thing, then He can run it any way He wants to. And He can break His own laws, He can institute His laws, He can stretch His laws out and just cause the intellectuals to have conniption fits. Because they're too wise to believe in the God that made it all. We also believe that God has established natural laws that work consistently by His own prerogative and sovereign power. But those natural laws themselves do not sustain the universe. It's sustained by the supernatural power of God. These axioms allow us to enjoy the revelation of Scripture that shows us a God who can operate within time and space as you and I know it to do supernatural things in the midst of natural things by which we are affirmed the biblical revelation of creation. Why God could not have created the heavens and the earth in 6 days? That's a moot question. Because He could have done it in 6 seconds. 6 nanoseconds. He did it the way He wanted to. And remember Revelation 4:11. God created all things, and they are created for His glory. You fail to realize that the universe is designed to glorify God, then you never can make sense out of everything that's taking place. So we'll take a short break and come right back.
Pastor Jesse.